Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Reset Rebel podcast with me, Jo Yule. And for today's episode, we have got our little titties in the sand of Niblau, which is very close to Santalaria. But it's episode 225. And I'm here with someone I've been trying to collar for quite some time to join us. He's got a very exciting new music project on the go, which is under the name of KJ Cuts. He's one half of that outfit, but he's also been part of Audio Jack for more than two decades, I believe. I think that could be over egging the pudding. We're just about to find out. It's Jamie from Audio Jack, island resident, island stalwart, and actually probably the first person I think I actually ever interviewed when I arrived in Ibiza 13 years ago. Jamie, welcome to the Reset Rebel.
Thank you very much. Good to be back. I think I remember feeling like a little bit of a rabbit in the headlights when you thrust that microphone into me 13 years ago.
Talking about wheatgrass.
I think that was a bit of a short fad for Rich. I think he got out of that. It's a lot of effort doing all of that growing and for not much return.
I actually hate wheatgrass. It's probably the most revolting thing that's ever passed my lips in the history of time. I can't lie.
No, I mean, I don't think I've eaten it since then. I mean, you don't eat it, you blend it into a drink. But Ginny's still very much into the into making like healthy juices and stuff in the morning. So I'm having probably some wheatgrass in a powder in a little tub instead these days.
What prompted you and Rich to move to Ibiza all those years ago? Because he's not here anymore, is he?
No, he's not here anymore. So I'll come on to that in a second, but we had been living in Leeds for 10 years, and that was an amazing place for music, for like sort of growing up as a DJ and a music act. There were so many clubs that were packed full every weekend. All of the student population, they loved electronic music as well. It was just a real thriving city for music, and it had amazing after party scene as well. And we were like in our 20s then, living for the weekend, out for days at a time, and it was great. Then when we got into our 30s, I moved in with Ginny. Like, I did have a crazy party house before that, where Ginny actually met me, because she came to one of our after parties and met me there. And then after a few months, we decided we'd get our own place, and everything sort of like started to wind down in terms of like the crazy party lifestyle. And then we were just kind of thinking, it's time to, we need to get out of Leeds and sort of find something that's a little bit more our vibe now. We thought about maybe moving to London, Berlin, I really loved, but just can't hack the cold winters. I mean, I was thinking somewhere warm would be good. Barcelona, I'd heard that it was suffering a little bit after the sort of 2008 financial crash. I later found that that wasn't the case, and then we'd come on holiday to Ibiza every year since 2002 at least once, and we came on a like a group friends holiday. We'd hired a villa. Normally we'd be like somewhere like the Jet Apartments and just like party, but then we were in a villa and we didn't really go out. We just spent time barbecuing, drinking around the pool, having chats, and all of a sudden a light bulb went on and we're like, this is the lifestyle we're looking for. So me and Rich were like, I think we can make this work. And then we had to convince the girls, Rich's wife or girlfriend at the time, now wife, and Ginny. They had to completely change their careers. We needed somewhere with an internet connection and an airport. They needed to like completely start again, but we managed to convince them. And it took a year to put the plan into place, and we came to find somewhere to live. And then, yeah, moved back in 2013. And I've never looked back. Rich, when he had his kid she's nearly 10 now, so I think they stayed for 5 years in total, and when she got to about 18 months old, she was didn't really like the heat. They were really sort of like yearning for the grandparents' support and things like that. And then I think one summer they went back, and it was a big friends gathering in a lovely like English garden. The weather, it was August, the sun was out, and everything was perfect. And I think they were just kind of like pushed over the edge and just said, let's move back to England. And they went back, we stayed.
I seem to recall you guys were actually all living together when I came to talk to you about wheatgrass.
Yeah, so that lasted for 2 years, and then we realised that we weren't students anymore, and that's not really possible. I mean, we had our own little houses, but you know, we needed our own space. So yeah, after 2 years, it felt like a lovely breath of fresh air just to have a place just for me and Ginny. They got a place just down the road, so we're still close to each other. But yeah, I mean, it was fun at first, but yeah, quickly the cracks started to appear when you're under each other's feet all the time. You've got different ways of living and things, so yeah, we needed to get our own space.
I mean, that's a big thing to sort of live together and work together. I mean, that's, you know, that's a bold step to sort of think that, you know, that's a lot of time to spend together, no matter how close that artistic relationship is and how long you've known each other. I think living with anyone who's not actually your partner, and even that's quite challenging at times.
Yeah, 100%. And Kate started working for Rich's partner. Kate started working for us as well. So there was three of us in the house all working together. And then, you know, it was, you just needed to get away. You needed space.
Nice. Well, you've got that now, and you live a stone's throw from Santa Laura. So why was it that you brought me to Niblau Beach this morning? What made you choose this as today's location?
Just auditory. The sound of the waves in the background is really nice for a podcast, in my opinion. I'm very much about sort of like, you know, like a nice background and things like that. But also it's just like a very nice, relaxing place as well. And out of the sun, you can, it's one of the nice... the few beaches where you've got the tree cover as well, so it's just nice to sit under the trees. And yeah, beautiful place.
I'm really glad you brought me here. I haven't been here for a while. I tend to avoid swimming here, but I feel like it's just one of the most delightful little shady spots under the pine trees, actually. And I'd forgotten how cool it is, actually, compared to the rest of the island. It's like literally baking. Going to the beach is not really the one at the moment already, and it's only what, June? Yeah. But it's actually really breezy and gorgeous here today, so thank you for that little inspired idea.
Yeah, you're welcome. And that is the one like downside to it, that's just not very nice getting in the sea, is it is rocky and full of seaweed. But the beach is gorgeous, and as you said before, you've got Solgood, so big up to Solgood and the crew there. If you know, you know.
Indeed. Well, one of your other, you know, other side... You've got a lot of sidekicks in this world. You've got the audio jack, you've got the KJ Cuts, which we're going to talk about in a bit, but you've also got the Sadido, Saeed collaboration of your other party hat that you wear sometimes as well with him.
Yeah, so that was an interesting one, really. I spent... So you were right, it's the 20th year of audio jack this year. So, I mean, I've been DJing for 30 years now, but doing it professionally for 20 years, just doing electronic club music. But that's not all the music that I'm interested in. It's you know, like, I've got loads of different musical tastes. And after a while, I just felt like I needed to be able to explore those, as well as... as just doing that, and then coming to Ibiza,
you've got no chance. We've got the German tourists arrived, putting their towels down to grab the shade before it departs.
All right, so let me cut back to that. Yeah, so basically, I'd been doing this kind of music and only that, just focusing everything that I had sort of in my heart and soul into that sort of music, and it felt quite constraining. You know, like, it was, yeah, I still loved it, but I really wanted to be able to do other things. And as I got older as well, my friends didn't want to come to like banging raves at DC10 and things like that. So I started to want to play and do gigs where I was playing more chilled music, bars and restaurants and things like that, so people could come along and just have like a chill time. And through lockdown, that was always that was available anyway. So, you know, you weren't allowed to dance, so it was a case of like going in and playing chilled music in chilled places. And then that I stuck with that. I met Saeed Sadido in 2000, and I want to say maybe 15 or 16. And it just turned out we had loads of stuff in common, so we just kind of started like getting into sort of music stuff together, and then just decided to one day start this quantum disco concept, which we've been doing around the island. And it was just kind of, it was a bit of an antidote to the sort of typical Ibiza club stuff with you know, music where you don't take yourself too seriously. It's very loose and fun, and people just really seem to like it.
I love your hat selection, the pair of you together.
I mean, I've got to credit Saeed for that. He's got a good hat selection. I've tried to sort of find some good ones to bring to the collective on my travels around the world, but I haven't managed to find anything quite that good yet. I think those are Nepalese ones that he's got that we sometimes wear.
They're epic. They look a bit like Tommy. Who is that comedian that used to wear those weird little hats?
Tommy Cooper. Yeah, that is a... I don't know if that's a Moroccan hat or something like that.
They're golden and always makes me giggle when I see them on Instagram. With you two have got some quite eclectic, strange little kooky posts that you do together.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was what it was all about. It was just about having some fun and, yeah, just keeping it light and upbeat.
And the J.R. Hartley moniker, where did that come from?
Well, so J.R. Hartley comes from... There was a, maybe it exists online now, but it used to be a commercial phone directory in the UK. Big, thick yellow book where you could look up like local businesses and things like that. And they used to do adverts on the TV. And there were, one of the adverts was this old guy ringing around bookshops to see if they had a book about fly fishing. And at the end of it, they said, yes, I want this book by J.R. Hartley called Fly Fishing. And then he said, oh, you do have it? My name? Yes. It's J.R. Hartley. And it was quite a sort of cult classic advert, wasn't it, in the UK? So my name's James Ryle, so J.R. So one day during lockdown, I thought I'd create a podcast. And it was a kind of concept podcast where it was a satire of J.R. Hartley, the old man, not me, but the old man trying to do a podcast himself where he'd dig through his old tapes. And he was kind of getting a bit senile, he'd get the names wrong, and like his wife had come in every now and again and play like a banging drum and bass track and things. So it was all really silly. It lasted two episodes, but the name stuck. So like I just used that name as my kind of DJ alias for Ibiza.
I remember that advert very, very well. And I wasn't surprised when I saw that, but I liked it. I was like, ah, amazing. It's a bit like Tony Hart, those type of old school characters. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although I think he might have been a paedophile.
Maybe.
I was watching this Instagram reel the other day. It was about one of those time capsules that you bury for like, like 20 or 30 years. And it was one from the 70s. And then this guy was digging it up. And then he was sort of bringing out all of these, you know, Jim will fix it and all these other little bits of paraphernalia, and it was like one by one, it was like, yeah, just sort of throwing them on the floor in disgust.
Yeah, but get that one buried again.
Burn it. So I mean, yeah, you are still traveling. I mean, you did a lot of touring. I seem to remember chatting to you last summer, and you'd been off here, there. You'd, a lot of quite far-flung places that you were obviously playing with Rich, and you're still out and about. What gigs have you got coming up this summer to celebrate 20 years?
So we've literally just kind of getting it all out there. Like I got my US visa approved on Friday. I was in London at the US Embassy, so I got that approved on Friday, so I'm now able to tour the US, which is kind of where most of our gigs are these days. So I've got one coming up in Humboldt County, which is like in the northern part of California, where they like grow all of the northern Californian things. You know what I mean. But it's nothing to do with that. That's just where it is. That's going to be like a huge festival run by a record label, Dirty Bird, that we have released on a few times. I think that's going to be loads of fun. And then now gig offers are starting to come in for the US now that we've put it out there that our visa is now ready and we can start booking things in. So we've had quite a long time off the Audio Jack gigs, the last ones that I did were the back end of last year, but then now we're starting to like book things in for summer. So yeah, there's not a lot in the diary at the moment, but a lot will start coming in soon now that we're kind of putting it out there. So the stuff that we're doing for the 20 years tour is we're going to be playing music from the last two decades, all our own stuff. I think we must have released 500 tracks or something like that in that time. So lots there. And then we're actually doing a podcast series as well, telling the stories of everything that sort of like led up to, what Audio Jack became, and sort of like fun stories from the road and things like that. Radio shows and lots and lots of stuff. So I can talk more about that when it's all kind of coming to fruition.
I want to just hear one of these epic stories from the last 20 years. You're going to have to give us, you've teased us now. What's one of your best tales that you obviously you're not going to ruin the podcast series, but just a disclaimer that we are now surrounded by everybody on their yoga mats and there's actually a class. I'm feeling very zen and that we're amongst the German middle-aged ladies of Niblau.
I mean, we set up my son's birthday on this beach this time last year, and it was, you know, there was balloons and like party tablecloths and things like that, and a group of similar tourists just came and set up right next to us on an empty beach. And I said, look, there's going to be like a lot of children here in about half an hour, and they just stayed the whole day right next to us through the party, just staring at us.
I'm feeling a little bit similar, but I'm quite enjoying it. It's definitely novel to be spectating on this spectacle that I don't know what's going to happen next, but everyone's got a yoga block now. I feel like I've let you down, Jamie. I didn't bring you one.
That's all right. As long as they don't start pumping out like heavy yoga tunes interrupting us.
Pumping something else then. No pumping.
That's kind of happened in yoga.
Good job it's breezy. So give us a one little anecdote from 20 years of being with Rich, living with him, living in Ibiza, making wheatgrass smoothies together. What else have you got?
All right then. So the first international gig that we ever did. So we went from playing a few little places in the UK, and then the next one was Beijing. And I had never been outside of, I think the furthest I'd been before was Turkey on holiday. So two mid-20s guys from Yorkshire. Let me just put that in there, because then this next bit will make sense. And it was free drinks on the flight all the way to Beijing. I think we went maybe via Dubai or something like that. So we got hammered all the way there. And then the gig, we didn't have a chance to sleep. We just had to go put our bags down, get freshened up, and then go and do the gig. And they were drinking whiskey and green tea in there, and that's what everybody drank. So that's what we were drinking. So stimulants, and obviously a very strong spirit as well. And it was the weirdest thing. They sat down when the beats kicked in and had a drink, and then during the breakdowns they'd get up and dance, and it was completely topsy-turvy. Anyway, that's by the by. That was a bit of a shock to us. But then the funny part happened when we went back to the hotel later. Now, they put us in this ridiculously grand hotel with all these like gold statues everywhere and things like that, and you know, we were just kind of like, oh wow. And but yeah, then the unfortunate part happened when I sort of woke up from sleepwalking naked in the corridor. my hotel room door had closed behind me. And then I was like, oh no, so what the hell do I do now? And then and I went to knock on Rich's door, and as I knocked on the door, I noticed that he hadn't shut it properly. So the door like opened, and he was out, absolutely out for the count, snoring his head off. So I went and used his phone and tried to call reception. I said, I've locked myself out of my room and I don't have a key. And they're like, I'm not going to do the voice. They said, okay, you come to reception. He said, okay, come reception. I said, I don't have clothes. You come reception. I don't have any clothes. You come reception. Oh God! So I was looking around. It's like, managed to find like a small hand towel and put it around myself. And then
it reach around?
It did, fortunately. Just, I think it was just like, it's like one of those sexy dresses where you've got one leg out. So I went down into reception, and as the lift doors opened, they just all went, oh, and pointed at me. And then luckily I was able to explain the situation, get a new key card, and that was fine. But that was like the first international gig experience. And that has happened to me once more. But unfortunately, I was much older and much more embarrassed. So that
happened this time?
Well, this time it happened.
Give us another.
This time it happened in Zurich. And so maybe sort of like 17 years on or something like that when I'm in my 40s. And this time, same thing happened. I wake up in the corridor, no clothes on, and down the corridor this time, luckily, there is a woman with a cleaning trolley. So I cover up myself, and I kind of just like wave and point at the door to, you know, say, can you let me back in? The woman screams and runs into the door and locks it into the room that she's cleaning and would not come out. Can I just add that she had a burqa on, so maybe this was like seeing a man naked was probably like very out of bounds for her. So I ran down to the cleaning trolley, which had towels on, once again got a towel around myself, went down to reception, and you know, I explained the situation, and you know, they were like, look, okay, well, you know, we kind of like, you know, need to see your ID, and they were okay about it. They gave me a key card.
You didn't have your passport with you though?
No, obviously not. went and let myself back in, and then like the next thing I know, there was like a bang 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 on the door, and it was like security there, and then they were just like, look, we've had a complaint from the cleaner saying that a man exposed himself at her. And we need to make sure that you're not just some pervert that's coming off the street, and that you actually do, you are supposed to have a room here, because we've let you into this room, we've got no idea who you are. So then I did have to go and get my passport, and you know, that settled everything. I was allowed to go back to sleep.
What ID did you use?
I had a passport. Yeah. Oh, no, the first time, nothing.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they were just kind. It's a hotel where this club puts their DJs in, so you know, maybe they're kind of used to it to a certain extent.
Are you used to it, to this sleepwalking situation?
No, twice it's happened, only twice in my life.
Oh, right, it's not like a regular thing.
Well, on gigs, it has happened one or two times before. Once after Ginny did the London Parks half marathon. I'm not going to go into that one, though.
Oh, why not?
Oh,
come on, I've got time.
No, off air. That one's more embarrassing.
Where did you end up that time?
In the room, but like...
Oh, come on.
All right, look, all I'll say is in my sleepy state, I tried to leave the room, and then Ginny called me back in and said, Jamie, what are you doing? There was like me, Ginny, and her brother all sharing a room. And then basically I tried to go to the toilet in probably what I thought was the toilet. It wasn't the toilet, and it wasn't somewhere very nice. So
the laundry basket is normally the one that it happens in.
Yeah, I'm not elaborating any further.
Right, you are. Okay, let's move on to something else. I don't know, like, I've never sleepwalked. I'm very, very glad about that. Sleep talked, maybe, but yeah, definitely not sleepwalked. And yeah, I can't imagine waking up on a hotel landing and going down to the lobby. I bet they wanted you to go down there, though, just to see what you were going to be wearing.
Yeah,
just
probably.
Have a good old chuckle and amuse them in their very boring, long 8-hour night shift.
Yeah.
I bet there'd be some quite interesting episodes you could record, actually, from hotel night watchmen around the island of Ibiza, I reckon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ibiza must be more ripe for it than anywhere in the world, surely.
Oh, God, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, what was it, though, that, you know, I know you say that you came here with Rich and his wife and Jenny, and you wanted to be somewhere a little bit, you know, different to Leeds, but what is it, you know, about the island that sort of kept you here for, it's been 13 years?
Yeah, good question, actually. So just a little preamble to that. When I used to come here on holiday off of DJing, I'd done a season here before as well, way back in 2002. After the first time I came, landing here always felt like home. It always felt really welcoming. It always felt somewhere that was super familiar, and, you know, that never left. And then when we decided to move here, we moved for, it wasn't anything to do with the music, it was just we wanted the weather and the lifestyle. And then the thing that I found that has really kept me here is the community. You know, like, I know so many people here that, you know, always, you know, you can walk out into Santillali, for example, you might just be going to post a letter or you know, pick something up from the shops, and you'll bump into someone, end up sitting down having a coffee and chatting for 2 hours, or having a beer and staying there all day, and, you know, like, that kind of thing is really nice. And, you know, when people sort of fall on hard times, everybody helps out, and it just feels like a very loving, nurturing place. And, you know, like, just sort of going out for dances and things like that, it's so lovely. You know, like, you know, maybe one day we'll have to move somewhere else, and, you know, maybe it'll be, you know, cheaper, there'll be maybe be more opportunity, well, it'll definitely be cheaper, maybe be more opportunities for my son, who's going to be sort of hitting teenage years in about 5 years, and, you know, these are all considerations. But I don't think you'll find a community like this, certainly not an instant community, anywhere. You know, I've been all over the world, and, you know, Ibiza is very special in that respect.
No, for sure. I think that's the number one thing that keeps you locked here. I mean, there's a lot of things that it lacks. That's without a doubt. But I think, yeah, it's a great place to raise a child. And I think, you know, obviously when you get to a certain age, you are just going to be a glorified taxi driver, because that's probably what happens to most parents here and from the people I speak to. And I think, you know, there's a lot of an abundance of amazing people and connections that can be created here, and that's absolutely what binds you, I think, for the long term, for sure. I mean, how does this island specifically, I mean, you've got two dogs, you know, you walk a lot with them as well, but how do you think Ibiza kind of inspires you artistically and musically?
Joe, I'm afraid we've only got one dog now.
Oh no. Yeah. I remember you telling me that actually not so long ago and I forgot.
Yeah, that's okay, it's okay. That's it's the grieving process is past now. But just to put that in there. And, well, I actually answered this question in another interview recently, so it's fresh in my mind. And it's just the melting pot. So one of the funny, like, just to sort of to go back a little bit, I remember when we first moved here, the record label manager of the label that we were signed to originally, Ralph Lawson, said, you know, how's it going to be sort of like living in this sort of paradise place for sort of musical inspiration, you know, before you were like making music in dirty basements in Leeds and things like that, and that would sort of like invoke sort of certain, you know, like musical ideas and things like that. But, you know, here I think that the sort of the melting pot of different cultures that are bringing their own musical sort of heritage and experience to the, you know, like, you know, just conversations and, like, you know, people sharing it with each other and things like that. And then just the kind of joyous nature of the island, I think, you know, just really sort of like makes you want to make music that makes other people have a good time. You know, and I think that's the big sort of takeaway from it. And also, you know, that's speaking about kind of our audio jack stuff. But, you know, like, now I'm kind of involved in all kinds of music, and, you know, I just want to make and play music that makes people smile and you know, have a good time. I've passed the time of trying to make stuff that's dark and edgy and things like that. You know, that was like 10 years ago. You know, now I just want sort of things that are sort of positive and happy, especially like after the crap time that you know, like, we've been through with COVID and the world's mad at the moment. You don't want to be like adding to the negativity, do you? You want it to be you know, try and rebel against that.
Well, that's exactly what you have done with Slow Burn, the album that you've created, your first actual proper record, so I believe, with Kevin Knapp. And, I mean, how did that actually come about? Talk us through it.
All right, so it would be better to kind of, like, wind back to add a little bit of context to this. So when I was growing up,
about creativity,
I had sort of, like,
fun,
two,
right?
Musical avenues. Like, one part was I was into the rave. I was getting into the Prodigy and things like that, and I was obsessed with that kind of music. But at the same time, I was like basketball mad. You'll maybe know that me and Sadido play like basketball all the time. Still love it now. So I was playing basketball all the time, and everybody that played it and was into basketball was also into all American culture and loved hip hop as well. So I was like really into hip hop. It's always been a part of my life that I've enjoyed, but never really explored artistically. Can't rap. Nor should I try. But the, you know, I could have sort of like explored that and tried to make some beats, but I was always so busy with the audio jack stuff, I never had time. So then in 2007 or 8, I was on tour with Rich, doing an audio jack tour in America, and one of the stops was in San Francisco. And the promoter had asked one of the resident DJs to kind of chaperone us around the city that time, and that was Kevin Knapp. And he's a larger-than-life African-American guy, and we hit it off immediately. We had a great gig, and then every time we would go back to San Francisco, we'd hang out. So we'd usually either play with him, or if we weren't playing with him, we'd hang out afterwards and be going to after parties and things like that and shooting the shit. Excuse me, if it's a clean podcast, you can edit that out. And then he dropped in after a sort of like the third or fourth times that we were together, that he used to be a professional singer doing like weddings and, you know, like sort of family events. You know, he grew up in a sort of like a sort of soul and gospel environment. He was classically trained and that kind of thing. Now, back then, getting a vocal for your music was like rocking horse shit. Sorry again. And then, so, you know, if we met anybody that could like do a vocal for us, we were like, yes, let's try and get this person on board. So we asked Kevin if he'd do some vocals for our audio jack music, and he agreed. And from there, like, he wasn't like an established artist at that point. He was like a local resident DJ. So from there, he started doing vocals for us and a few different acts, and then he started to like think, well, I want to get into this thing. So he started making his own electronic music as well. So Kevin's career started to build alongside him doing music for us. And we were chatting about our sort of musical heritage and saying, you know, we learned that we're both in, like, well into hip hop and R&B and things like that. I said, one day we've got to do something like that. But we never had time. We were always like completely focused on the electronic stuff. And then during lockdown, we had loads of time. So we said, with no expectations, agenda, I said, look, I'll make a few beats. You see if any of them resonate with you. And if they do, then you can like try writing some lyrics. Let's just see how it goes. And it was literally the most organic process that I can remember in any kind of, certainly any kind of like duo situation where, you know, like you're working with someone sort of like thrust into something for the first time. You know, like me and Rich have been working together for years, and that's very easy now. But like, you know, when you kind of just sort of start something with someone from scratch, it just flowed so easily. Everything sort of like, it almost seemed to make itself. Before we knew it, we had an album. So we had that first draft done. Then the lockdowns lifted and we just kind of got back into our normal electronic stuff, and it kind of got left on the shelf a little bit. And then a year later, Kevin was living in Berlin at the time. I just finished a US tour and I went back to Berlin, and I spent a week there so we could finish the album. So we went into his studio, re-recorded any of the vocal bits that needed doing, and kind of just finalized what it was all going to be like musically. Went and did like some press shots and stuff like that done. This is like quite a funny situation actually. So me and Kevin were chatting about his experiences in Berlin, and he was saying, you know, sometimes if you get off on the wrong tube stop, you know, there can be people there that kind of, you know, don't really like black people, and you know, like there's still like the sort of the skinhead element a little bit in some places, and I was like, oh man, that must be really tough. And I had like quite long hair at the time, and I decided that I wanted to kind of separate the look for these press shots from my normal audio jack press shots. So I was like, right, I'm gonna go and get like a number three, which is like kind of not quite a skinhead, but like short hair. So I went to the barber and said, Nummer zwei bitte, you know, and my German's not great, so I just wanted like it all kind of shaved quite short for these press shots. And number three in German doesn't mean that, it just means completely to the skin. So he's completely skinned my head, and I turned up back to Kevin looking like one of the people that would have pressed him on the wrong tube stop.
Wow, I think it's dry. Ein, zwei, drei.
Oh, it is, isn't it? What did I say? Yeah. So yeah, maybe I got a number two instead.
That's just mental though, isn't there, to think that that's still going on. And this, I love some of his lyrics though as well, you know, alluding to, you know, quite a lot of the traumatizing things that have happened to him.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been difficult growing up, you know, in the US. You know, I always feel like I grew up in like a very, you know, isolated place near Hull, where, you know, I didn't ever see anybody that wasn't white until I was in my teen years. But even then, sort of like when I got to uni and things like that, I didn't really see any racism. I didn't really see much racism. I think it was just much more prevalent in the US. But yeah, there's a lot, like the lyrically, the whole album is Kevin for the first time being very vulnerable and talking about himself, his experiences, his relationships and things like that. Whereas, you know, leading up to that, it was all kind of the electronic stuff where it's all about just sort of like delivering a catchy hook.
How did you sort of decide, you know, what kind of road his lyrics would go down exactly? Was that just something very personal to him? Did he say, I want to, you know, express myself and kind of go into some of the storytelling of his life? Or how did you, you know, arrange that?
Okay, so we didn't. So what happened was, leading up to this point, like Kevin is a very sort of deep thinker. He's got a lot to say. And, you know, with his electronic music, like I said, it was kind of like, it's all about sort of catchy hooks and things like that. He wasn't really saying anything important. And a lot of his friends had said to him, you know, man, you've got some good things to say. You know, you should like do something where, you know, you express yourself a little bit more and things like that. And I think this was the perfect opportunity to do that. So, like I said, we didn't have any agenda or expectations. I made some beats, sent them to him, and it just came out of him. And I think that was just the kind of thing that he felt like doing at the time. And, you know, it worked. It was great. You know, like I think everybody, for sure, everybody that knows him, that has listened to the lyrics of the album, love it, because it's like a very sort of nice personal thing to hear. But now, sort of, now that it's out there, you know, the people that haven't met him before, it's, you know, meaningful to them as well, which is nice.
No, I did not expect that when I first hit play on track number one of eight. Obviously, there's a ninth remix on there, but it just, I don't know what I expected, actually, but it wasn't that. And I was like, ooh, I really love this. It's like, yeah, proper driving around Ibiza with your kind of, you know, your arm hanging out the window, like sunny. Obviously, there's you know, some very deep work on there in terms of the things that he's revealing. But I don't, you could almost, like, if you weren't paying proper attention, probably get that tonality from it. It could just be quite, you know, happy sunshine vibes until you kind of really pay a bit more attention.
Do you know, that's one of the things that I love about, I'm not going to just say music, because I feel like that's, you know, that could be in a book, a film, a painting, you know, like you sort of enjoy it on a certain level and you can just listen to it and you don't have to pay attention to what's being said. And then if you want to go a little bit deeper and pay a bit more attention, then you get a completely, you know, a whole new layer to the story. And that's what I love about things like that, you know, like a good film to me is something that I'm left with questions at the end of it and I want to watch it again to find out more, or want to go and Google what's going on or something like that. You know, if it's all kind of like laid out and, you know, like neatly tied up in a little bow at the end, and like you're just like, right, I don't need to like engage with that anymore. I just want, you know, like I really appreciate things that you kind of, you know, you need to kind of delve a little bit further and listen again and again and again. But the music had to be something that, for me personally, it had to be something that was just like really easy on the ear and just nice that you could, like, you know, play at a party or just while you're chilling out and things like that. I wanted it to be much more kind of De La Soul or Arrested Development than like NWA. You know, like, and I think that's one of the nice things about the lyrics as well. Like, it's not all this kind of like, you know, like who's got the most and who's like shagged the most and all that kind of thing that you get in so much hip hop. And it's like, you know, that was like great for the sort of gangster rap of the 90s. But like, I think it's just, it's a bit boring now. I think, you know, people want to, like, you know, have a little bit more sort of depth in the lyrics and something that's like more interesting to listen to, more personal.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, track one was my favourite when I first listened to it, but then I never got, you know, more than four or five tracks in, and then I got distracted by something. But the last few days I've listened to it like all the way through, and Time Defiance, I don't know what it is, but it's almost got like a fluty, slight kind of like weird, I know it's not a flute, don't panic, I know it's not, but I don't know what that is, that kind of, that sound, that quality of sound that sounds quite ethereal in terms of the hook.
Okay, so I like to describe it as sounding like something like the Waltons. So it's like, it's got this kind of like, when I listen to the music of that track, I can just imagine like a big open expanse in America with someone sat on a porch, like tumbleweed blowing across. It's just kind of like, it's got this kind of like old nostalgic sort of melancholy to it.
Yeah, that sort of does it. But I don't know, I just can't, it's very catchy. I can't stop listening to it at the moment. That's like I'm listening to it quite a few times a day at the moment. I've got a bit of a problem developing.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the process to sort of make the beat. So I've maybe made 20 beats and then sent them all over to Kevin, and he picked out the ones that he liked, wrote some lyrics over it, and then I kind of built the music around, the rest of the music around what his lyrical or vocal content was. But in terms of like getting the original musical ideas, I literally just sat there and scrolled through like idea after idea after idea after idea until I found something that was just really catchy. You know, for me, that's like really important in music, that you've got to have something that's like really, really catchy and you know, just, you just want to listen to it again and again.
How do you come up with, I mean, like, you know, obviously music's been around for hundreds of years. I was hosting a panel about it just last weekend for the Ray of Light Awards, and it was about, you know, music being the missing ingredient in modern medicine. And I think it's, you know, it's definitely something that I feel to be true. And I think, you know, to try and find something original at this stage in the game in hip-hop or house or electronic music, it's like, you know, do you listen to lots of other stuff and kind of take elements, I'm not talking about samples, but like little moments or little snippets or little, you know, I think it's hard to come up with something completely original this far down the line.
Yeah, well, I haven't listened to every piece of music that exists, but I've listened to a lot. And so the roots of the music in the KJ Cuts album is 90s hip hop. You know, that's where the beats come from. It's like this boom bap beat style. And then with the sort of melodies and things in there, I wasn't really looking for anything specific. I just wanted to look for something that was catchy and, you know, I felt sounded quite original. I mean, some stuff in there is kind of, you know, the Game Over track was like, that was directly influenced by Witness, by Roots Maneuver. So like, if you listen to that track, then you'll definitely hear where that influence has come from. But I think that was the only track on the whole album where it was like, I'd love to make something like this, because that was just a really sort of like special song to my heart, and I just think that's like quite a unique sound. But with the other stuff, it was just, I was really looking for something that I was like, that's quirky and original, let's see if we can make that work. And then I'd see if I could find a beat that would work with it. And then once we had that, then the idea was, now how can I make this a bit different to everything else that's out there? And that is the little electronic flourishes and things like that, because that's not really done. Now that's us bringing our kind of electronic background into this like sort of hip-hop world. And I think there is some music out there, but it's not generally that done. So it was nice to kind of bring the two worlds together and make that work.
But when you say you're looking for ideas, like, where are you looking?
So I've got a huge sample library, and sometimes I will just go through kind of sounds on a synthesizer until something jumps out, and then write something from scratch. So yeah, both of those things. So I'll just sit there and just kind of go through everything for hours and hours and hours until I've like found something that I think is like an interesting idea. So sometimes it's pre-recorded samples that other people have created, and you can chop those up. It's like, I mean, that's classic like hip-hop sort of music beat making, you know, like sampling other records, chopping them up and then putting a beat over them. So there was a lot of that involved, but then also kind of like writing music around that as well.
How many man hours goes into a record like that? That does sound quite labor intensive. And, you know, obviously you had the time in lockdown, but, you know, you have all these other gigs, you've got your own little studio now that's just sat, you know, out of the house. You're not on your balcony now looking out to the sea of Santa Lalia.
Yeah, so it's kind of, it's all a sort of, all of the different music projects that I've got feed into one another in terms of like the sort of prep and research that goes into it. So like, for example, I'll go hunting for some samples for a particular project, for example. Like maybe I'm looking for, let's say I'm looking for some e-piano, like Rhodes keys for a certain, let's say I'm like looking for that for an audio track or house track or something like that. And maybe I'll go and find 10 and I'll use one of them. So the other 9, I'll put them into a folder called keys. And then all of these folders are very well organized. So then when I'm kind of looking for ideas for other projects, I've already got all this sort of like stuff shortlisted and saved that I know that I like personally. And then I just need to see if it'll fit the new thing. So yeah, I mean, it's like it's kind of the least sexy part of the music industry. But inside, I'll tell you this as well, like the prep that goes into anything for sort of music production or DJing allows you to be sort of like much more in your flow when it comes to the DJing or the writing process, because all the prep's done. If you get an idea, you know exactly where to find it, and then you can just go without sort of like wasting time searching for things.
That's just interesting, because I just think, well, I don't know, it's a bit like podcasting. You think about, how do you find unique ways to present content, and how do you come up with new ideas? I mean, obviously, when I started this podcast 8 years ago, there was not a single other speech-based podcast on the island. And I always, you know, when you were saying, oh, should we go and do this in the studio? And I was thinking, well, I think out of 225 episodes, maybe like 20 have been indoors or down the line. And I think, you know, doing this outdoors in different places and spaces around the island back then was felt quite novel. Obviously now it's not, because everyone's doing it. But, you know, I think trying to keep things fresh and trying to find new ideas and new ways to present things, and, you know, not just listen to hundreds of other podcasts and rip off another idea. You know, musically, it's the same sort of thing. It's like, you know, should you keep listening to more and more and more and more, and then bringing in the things that, you know, you like or you feel like you could do a different version of? I don't know. It just must be difficult, I think, when you've been doing it for more than 20 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, so I think, like, I don't even think that's a conscious thing. I think that, like, everything that you absorb, and it's not even necessarily music, you know, it can be anything that's sort of like in your environment and your experiences, all feeds in to what you choose to do when you're in that moment of creating music. You know, I don't think you sort of like some, like I said before, I wanted to sort of I was inspired by that bass line from that track, and I wanted to use that in one of our tracks. So, you know, it's not, I didn't copy it, but I took inspiration from it and created something with that in mind. But most of the time, you know, you are just kind of a vessel that's full of all of the things that you've experienced in life, and that's what comes out. You know, I don't think it's anything to do with like you coming up with sort of an idea from scratch out of nowhere. It's all just kind of like you've got all this stuff logged in your subconscious, and then that just comes out at certain times. I think to a certain extent, sometimes I do believe in the kind of like Rick Rubin collective consciousness thing where, you know, you are just a conduit for ideas that are sort of like floating around up there in the ether, and they just come down when you're sort of like making yourself available to it, you know, because I think things like that have happened, but, you know, like I'm not sure whether it is just stuff that was already in there. I don't know. But either way, I think, I think it's not a case of like going and doing research and going, okay, what are we gonna sort of like have this project be based on like what's already there. I think, you know, like you've already got it all in there and just like, right, what do we want to do? But like I said, with this project, we didn't have a plan. It just literally like, I'll make some beats, you know, just like make some, you know, I didn't have a plan that I wanted it to be a certain style or BPM. I was like, found a few cool ideas, put a beat behind them, sent them to Kevin. He liked some and not others, and then that was the kind of the filter, you know, the Venn diagram of what I sort of liked and what he liked was what we used.
It's a very Rick way of approaching things if you're going to bring up Mr. Rubin, because I think he's just very much all about like, you know, if you're going to be creative, you should do it for, you know, your own personal project sake. You should never create something wishing to get something back from it. I mean, I see that posted a lot all over Instagram, and I sort of feel like, well, it's a nice idea, isn't it? But, you know, ultimately, we all need to exist on this planet. We all need to be paid for our work and our creativity, because that's basically what you do for a living. And I think, you know, how do you even make money for an album these days? Like, what's the plan for the record? Obviously, it's on Bandcamp, it's on Beatport, but, like, what was it? You know, if you had no real plan for it, what would you actually like to see happen with that long-term plan?
Well, I mean, there is the option of touring it live, so that's a possibility. But we also need to see like how well it's received. It's a seed at the moment, and we haven't like, so it's been quite a difficult thing to get out there, because the electronic world has only got a certain amount of people in there that are interested in hip-hop music. The hip-hop world are not interested in two electronic music guys coming in there. It's a little bit gatekept. So we've got to grow this organically. Everybody that's heard it, that likes that, you know, that is receptive to this kind of music, likes it so far. So it's going to be a slow burner. And that is not why we called it that, but it's just quite apt that it is. But I think, I think it just needs to grow slowly and organically. Ultimately, what me and Kevin would like from it is that it does well enough with sort of sales and streams that we can sustain it and do more, because it's something that has definitely been very, like, both cathartic and, you know, it just feels like it's been an itch that needs to have been scratched for a long, long time. You know, this kind of music is just something that I love. And, you know, I've made kind of just sort of hip-hoppy beat stuff just to play out, you know, on gigs with Cedido before. But, you know, being able to sort of get Kevin to do his vocals on there has been great. And we're very keen to do more. But, you know, if it's just going to eat up time and not give any return, then we can't really afford to do it. So, yeah, we're just kind of like trying to get it out there now, trying to get more people to listen to it and see how that goes, and then we'll just take it from there. But me and Kevin are going to be touring a lot as Audio Jack and Kevin Knapp in the States this summer. We're both on the same DJ agency now, so they're going to be like doing a lot of gigs together, because we've got a lot of music together as Kevin Knapp and Audio Jack as well. We just had another big record release on Crosstown Rebels last month. We're in Juno, aren't we? So we'll be sort of like touring that. And problem is getting into a studio to rehearse together. He lives in Oakland and I'm here, so if there's an opportunity where I can go and get a week there in between two weekends worth of gigs, then we can try and see if we can kind of do the live thing and then possibly tour it.
Well, that sounds like a great idea. I think you should get Kevin over here though and do some sort of live, I don't know, a live gig at Soul Good or something, or maybe somewhere a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I know. He was almost going to be able to come. He was trying to get a gig at Akasha as Kevin Knapp, and it just didn't work out, which was a real shame, because I would have loved him to be there for the launch party actually on the 8th of May. But yeah, it's a long way to come. But if he is over in Ibiza, then yeah, it would be great to do something for sure.
And lastly, I mean, I guess, you know, you've done 20 years of Audio Jack and clearly that's going extremely well if you're off touring around the States. But I think, you know, if you could have to choose one genre for sort of the long term, you know, rest of your career, which direction would you like to sort of head in?
Well, I mean, like, my J.R. Hartley stuff is completely open format now. You know, I play a country and western track if it worked. So, you know, I can't, I mean, genre, you know, you could be so genre specific and say, like, I'd like, you know, German micro house, and, or you could say, I just, you know, like, I'm a lover of all music. But I mean, if you're talking about in terms of, like, if I had to give up one or the other, Oh, I don't know. It's a really tough one. Really tough one. I can't say either way. Yeah, sorry. I can't choose.
Well, I might join this yoga class, actually, because my back is now really hurting. I'm just watching this fluidity of these middle-aged spines. It's looking very, very agreeable. And we're now surrounded by small children and animals. It's been really lovely to hear the story. I've been dying to find out more. And I'd love to, yeah, if Kevin does come over here, do let me know, because I'd love to come and experience him in full live action. It's congratulations on 20 years of Audio Jack as well. And yeah, some of this album will be featured on this podcast, and we'll definitely put the link for anyone that wishes to purchase this from Bandcamp or Beatport in the episode show notes. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back.